Accession number 17548, Reel 1.
Mr. Oliver, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
At Wrexham, North Wales.
Which year was this?
1912.
Did you grow up and have your education in Wrexham?
Yes. Mostly in here.
Which school did you go to in Wrexham?
The National Church of England School.
How old were you when you left there?
14.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father was a hairdresser, master hairdresser and tobacconist.
Did you get a job when you left school?
Yes, I worked for a short while in a hotel in and around Bala in North Wales. Then I went up to the around Watford and that area on overhead cables. National Grid at the time.
So what job were you doing when war broke out?
I was working in Oxford in a garage, a City Motor Company in Oxford.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain's broadcast declaring war on Germany?
I did. I was in South Wales working for this company in Oxford, driving some American tourists around South Wales, and I was at the Langland Bay Hotel in Swansea when war broke out. And being a territorial, I had to report back to Didcot in Oxfordshire.
When had you joined the TA?
Oh, I joined the TA 2 years previous. So.
Where did you join?
I joined at Didcot.
Why did you join?
Well, they were asking, it was drawn about the time that there was a lot of unrest in the country with the Nazi Germany, and they were asking volunteers to join different units, and I opted for the Royal Army Service Corps.
Why did you opt for them?
I liked driving, and it was a transport unit, so I decided to join. The company I joined, first of all, the TA, was a motor ambulance convoy, so 6 MEC.
What kind of training did you get with them?
Well, just the normal mechanical training for sort of quick, sort of driver mechanic with the engine and things like that. They sent me to a local garage in Reading to learn about the ins and outs of car engines and that.
Did you get any infantry training as well?
No infantry training at all, no. Well, I say no infantry training at all. We had the usual range work with the Enfield 303 rifle and the Bren gun and things like that, Sten gun and all that kind of thing.
How did you feel when you heard we were at war with Germany?
Well, I don't really know. It was a kind of a relief, really, that something had happened, you know. Everybody was getting all this, the ARP and all the rest of it. They'd been training. I thought myself, well, something's going to break eventually.
Well, what happened to you once war was declared?
Well, I reported back to my unit in Didcot, and then I was embodied into the regular army there, and that's when I had my first promotion to corporal, because we were training militia boys. They were just coming in and we were training them. So that's when I had my first promotion.
Did you go to France in 39?
Yes, we went to France in the just the beginning of 1940, we went to France, January 1940, I believe. I can't remember the exact date, but I was with the BEF there.
Which unit were you with?
I was with motor ambulance convoy.
The 6th MAC?
6th MAC, yes.
Which division was that?
I'm pretty hazy about these things at my age. I think it was the 4th Division, it was the BEF. We had the red diamond on the arm. I'm always hazy about division. but we were stationed at Ransar near Arras.
Under what living conditions?
Well, we weren't doing too bad. We were living in a big hall, and one or two were in little farm buildings and that. So the conditions weren't too bad at the time.
Did you have any contact with the French civilian population?
Oh yes, there in the village for the. We used to meet all the French civilians all the time in the village, and also in Arras itself, because Arras is quite a big town. And most of the time it was a very, very bad winter at the time, and everything was at a standstill. It was definitely a Cold War, and we used to go around Arras and shopping and that, and then they used to take us on trips to the Vimy Ridge Memorial, the Canadian Memorial there, and different places of interest from the First World War. And then we moved from there and went up through into Belgium.
That was when the Germans attacked?
That was when the Germans broke through. Well, they went around the Maginot Line, as you know. They came in through Belgium.
Just before you go on to Belgium?
Yes.
How did you get on with the local French near Arras?
We didn't get on too badly with them. There were no real upsets at all. No.
Did the troops behave themselves?
Yes, pretty well. We had one or two episodes where they had fights with the locals. Some of the lads, not particularly in my unit, but in other units, and we had two or three under arrest in our camp for a while. A couple of Scots lads, they'd upset a couple of women, I believe, in the town. But, by and large, they were pretty well behaved.
Did you ever see any unpleasantness with the French population?
No, none at all. No.
Did you have any contact with any French soldiers?
No.
Now, you were telling me about going into Belgium, if you could pick it up from there, please.
Yes, we went up into Belgium, because the regiments had got, I think they got as far as Louvain, actually, and we went up as an ambulance unit because of casualties and that, and of course, as you probably know, Jerry was a bit fast coming through, and we were taking the wounded to a place called Crombeek, just above Dunkirk. We took them to this place, and there was a terrible amount of casualties. We had them in this big church at Crombeek, and we were taking them down to the hospital ship in Dunkirk Harbour on the mole there. And we'd done three or four trips from Crombeek with wounded soldiers down there, and then suddenly we were unable to go back, so I took over on a motorcycle and I was ferrying medical supplies just around the area. And of course from then on, well, it was every man for himself on the beach.
Did you have any fire directed at you?
Oh yes, we were under heavy fire on the beach at Dunkirk. I think we were very lucky, really, because a lot of I expect you've seen the picture, the longest day, and where all the chaps were on the beaches and that. What they were doing, they were gradually getting us away, and being with an ambulance unit, There's a few medical corps chaps with us and that, and we were treating people on the beach. And eventually I got away on a Dutch coaster that the Royal Navy had they'd commandeered.
Just before we go on to your escape, could you tell me more about the work of ferrying the wounded from Crombeek to Dunkirk? About any incidents that happened to you?
Oh yes, there was one place we had to, just before we entered into Dunkirk itself, we come on a heavy aerial bombardment, and two or three of the ambulances were overturned and wounded were, you know, getting pretty roughly treated there. And we had to sort of get hold of other ambulance units which were also converging on there, and taking the more seriously wounded from the ambulance we already had. It was kind of doctors and nurses, because the Queen Alexandra nurses were there as well. They were sorting out the more seriously wounded to get them on the hospital strip. Then we had the walking wounded had to sort of stay with us. That's what happened there. It was pretty horrendous at the time.
Where did you collect the wounded from?
From Crombeek. I can't tell you the exact, as I say, everything was so haphazard, but I can remember the name of the town we were at, Crombeek, and the church where they had the wounded and the dying there, because quite a few men died on the way. And I can still taste the blood, you understand, you know, when you... We were wrapping these chaps up in blankets and stacking them up, the dead and that. And that was a pretty horrendous thing, believe me.
But was it a field hospital in Crombeek?
A field hospital in Crombeek, a casualty clearing station. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have medical training to give first aid?
No, not at all. Not at all. No, we were just the drivers. But we had... the 6th MEC was a mixed unit of Royal Army Medical Corps and Royal Army Service Corps. Incidentally, I hold a Royal Army Medical Corps regimental number, because they put me in the Medical Corps before I went in the Service Corps, accidentally, more or less.
And whereabouts in Dunkirk did you take the wounded to?
Right down into the... there's a mole in Dunkirk, on the docks there. It stretches out the sea, and the hospital ship was tied up on the mole, and we took the wounded... We were taking the wounded backwards and forwards there. I think altogether I'd done about 3, maybe 4 trips. I can't remember now, but with the ambulance down there. And then, of course, everything stopped because Jerry had closed in so close that I believe he'd taken Crombeek. And the Royal Engineers had been blowing up the bridges, and that, because there's a lot of canals and that there. So we weren't able to get back in the end. The last time I went anywhere near Crombeek was a little field station there where, by this time, my ambulance had gone, and I'd got a motorcycle, and I was taking medical supplies from there into Dunkirk itself. You know, they commandeered one or two buildings there, and the medical corps teams, they were working in these buildings.
Were these just lightly wounded people?
Anyone?
Were the wounded that you were carrying just...
Oh,
lightly?
No. We had a couple of men that had leg amputations and all manner of things. There was a very, very heavily wounded men there. And we got them onto this hospital ship. I can't even remember the name of the ship. But we got them onto this ship. And eventually, I believe, this is something I don't really know, but I believe that the ship moved away from the mole, and... how they ferried the wounded to the ship after that, I don't know. But I ended up on the beach itself. within sight of them all. I could see them all from where I was.
So you were carrying stretchers onto the ship, were you?
That's right, yes.
Was the mole damaged?
It was in the end, yes, because they jerry-strafed them all then. I only went on the ship once, that was on the first trip, but after that they'd organised some dockside stretcher bearers to take them on.
So, you said eventually you ended up on the beach.
Yes.
How far from the mole were you on the beach?
Well, what shall I say? I could see the mole from where I was. Well, the multi-story car, about twice the distance of that multi-story car park away, I don't know that would be. But, like I say, I don't know, did you ever see the film, The Longest Day? Only there are actual pictures there of the men all lined up in mostly regiments and battalions, and that they'd line them up on the beach waiting for the small boats coming in, you know. But I was there, I was on the beach about 24 hours before we were lifted off, actually.
Were you queuing on the beach?
Oh, yeah, queuing. There were long queues from the water's edge right up to where the promenade part was, you know. Well, the long queues of men, hundreds of men, or thousands, really.
Were things orderly, or were people pushing and shoving?
No, there was... Everything was very, very orderly, very regimental. The NCOs were taking charge and making certain that men were in the correct units, which wasn't always possible. Some units were very mixed.
Were you with people from your units?
No. I didn't see any of my own unit at all until I got back to... this is the funny thing. I landed at Ramsgate, and then I went by train to Wrexham in North Wales, which is my hometown, funnily enough. I was in the barracks there for a couple of weeks, and then I was sent to Leeds.
Before we take it on a bit further, if I can just come back to Dunkirk, were you attacked by the Germans whilst you were in the queues?
There was a lot of strafing going on by aircraft, but luckily, actually it was one of the miracles of Dunkirk, really. There was a sea mist above us, and when we crossed the channel, that mist remained with us. Oh, we were attacked right across the channel by aircraft. And E-boats as well. I saw one ship torpedoed.
What did you see when it was torpedoed?
Well, we saw these very fast motorboats, and somebody yelled out that they were German torpedo boats, and there was a ship. Who she was or what she was, I do not know, but she was a little way from us. We could see her. And we saw a terrific explosion, and then we sort of went towards there, but I think it was too late. Everything was haywire.
How frightening was it on the Dunkirk beaches?
It was pretty frightening, believe me. Any person who said they went frightened there was either the very, very brave or telling a load of lies.
Did you despair of getting off?
I did, yes. I thought, well, this is it. Either I was going to get killed or taken prisoner, which I wasn't. And it was a great relief to land in England.
How did you get from the queue onto the ship?
Well, we had to wade out into the water. There were all kinds of small boats coming in, like whalers and things like that, with sailors on them, and they sort of dragged us on board. There's quite a few French army chaps. They were on the same little boat as myself, and they took us out to what I was told was a Dutch merchantman lying out there, a coastal vessel, and they handed us, we had to go up rope ladders from the small boat onto the ship. And
how did they treat you in the Dutch ship?
Oh, very well. We were crowded. We were really jammed tight. She must have been pretty well down to the waterline by the time everybody was on board. They took as many as they possibly could on board before they moved. But when I say a Dutch ship, it wasn't Dutch manned. It was Royal Navy. It was commandeered by the Royal Navy. They were all Royal Navy personnel in it.
Were you given any food or drink?
No, there was no way they could give us any food or drink. There was far too many.
Did you bring anything back?
Well, no, not really. When I landed in England, all I had one was a vest, and I'd been in the water, and my clothing was waterlogged, and when we got off the boat Ramsgate there, we had to cross two from the where our ship. We had to cross two more ships to get onto the pier there, and then we were dished out with any clothing that was available. And I think I landed in Wrexham with a tin hat and a pair of sailor's bell bottoms. That's about all I had in a vest. We'd got no other accoutrements. Our arms and like that were all taken off us, rifles and things like that.
Were there any people at Ramsgate to give you any
comfort? There were all kinds of reception. There was a women's voluntary service, the nurses and other civilian units there, and they were dishing us out with cigarettes and eatables and hot drinks. Oh, we were really well catered for there. They were well organized by the time we got there. Because I think we were the last to leave Dunkirk, really. It was the last day of evacuation.
So what condition were you in by the time you got back to Britain?
Well, we were a pretty sorry state, really. By and large, we were all very, very cheerful to think that we'd arrived back, you know.
And what was the attitude of people in Britain to the troops who were coming back?
Oh, the attitude was great. They were, you know, we were well fated, more or less, you know, as the heroes of the hour sort of idea. Yes, it was. I think the attitude in Britain at the time was they'd been warned that we were doing an evacuation of troops and that, and I think their big worry was how many are going to get away, you know, that was the attitude.
So you said you got up to your hometown?
Yes, I landed in Wrexham in North Wales, which, as I say, is my hometown. I landed in the barracks there, and everything was a bit haphazard there. They had different tents and marquees where what they were doing, they were, regardless of what your unit was, they were paying you so much money so you could go into town, and that rekitted us with new uniforms and the like. And my cousin, Elsie, she lived right at the back of the barracks. And her boyfriend, he'd arrived from Dunkirk at the same time, and they were going to get married the following Saturday, so I asked permission to go to the wedding, and it was refused. So I went AWOL, and I went to the wedding anyhow. And I came up in But after the wedding, I went back into barracks, and I came up in front of one of the officers there, and well, he just let things go and put me on the train for Leeds. And that's where I met up with the rest of my unit.
Why was he so lenient, do you think?
Well, I don't think it could be anything else after what we'd been through, sort of idea. Well, it may have helped that my father was an ex-Royal Welsh Fusilier. Because he asked me if I had any relatives in the town. I said, yes, my father had been in the First World War in the Royal Welsh Fusiliers in Wrexham Barracks. Oh, I don't think anybody got, for going AWOL for a couple of days, I don't think anybody got any serious trouble over it.
Was your unit, the 6th MAC, reformed in England?
It was reformed, yes, in Bobby Tracy. Because I was in Leeds, you know, for a few days, and then they sent me down to Bobby Tracy, and that's when I met up with them. We'd lost two or three chaps. The Earl of Cardigan. Oh, sorry. The Earl of Cardigan was our transport officer, and he was taken prisoner before Dunkirk, but he managed to escape over the Pyrenees into Spain. Then we lost one chap. We used to call him Tinker, a lad called Swimming from Oxford. He was killed. And we had two other casualties, both sergeants. When the hospital we were evacuating to before Crombeek, that was heavily bombed, and two sergeants, they were killed there as well.
What happened to you from then on in the war?
Well, after that, I was in England, more training troops and things like that, and I went to different companies. I ended up with 13 Troop Carrying Company, and we went to Normandy with 48 Commando Royal Marines.
What was your unit again?
13 Troop Carrier.
13 Troop...
Carrying Unit.
Carrying...
Carrying Unit.
Unit or yes. Company?
13 Troop Carrying Company. That were
13 Troop Carrying Company of the
Royal Army Service Corps, yeah.
And you went to Normandy with which?
We were attached to the 48th Commando Royal Marines.
When were you attached to 48th Commando?
Well, that was just prior to Normandy, and we took their vehicles over, their jeeps and staff cars, we took them over to Normandy in support of the 48th Commando. That was just the initial part. We left them when we landed in Normandy, we left them and went back to our own units.
What kind of vehicles did you have?
We had the Bedford QLs. They were big four-wheel drive troop carriers.